City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
You are listening to the Buzzer Beaters Podcast on the All Hornets Podcast Network, one podcast feed with multiple shows, making sure we cover the Charlotte Hornets from every angle. If you like what you hear, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave a five-star review. The All Hornets Podcast Network is affiliated with the Fans First Sports Podcast Group. On today's episode, Eric and I will be giving some quick thoughts on the new Vice President of Basketball Operations, Jeff Peterson's introductory press conference. And Eric will be giving his way too early top five NBA draft billboard for the Charlotte Hornets. So with that being said, I'm your host for today's episode, Atticus Ferguson.
And I'm your co-host, Eric Barnes.
Eric, it's been a few weeks since we've spoke. I had a few family things come up, so I had to be away for a while, still watching the Hornets when I can. It kind of coincided with the All-Star break as well. So, kind of a busy time of the year for the Hornets. Obviously there's been a lot going on, with some new additions. We even saw one today. How have things been going for you, man?
They've been good, man. Just working and, keeping track of my sports teams, including the Hornets, and, hopefully looking for some positivity. As we talked about and touched on in the past, the sports scene in North Carolina right now isn't that great. So, we're kind of hitting that cycle of draft season as the season winds down. So I want to be the first to kind of touch on some of these guys because I'm kind of a draft junkie. That's one of my favorite things. So, I'm excited to get into that later. But first, of course, we got to discuss Jeff Peterson and kind of what it seems like his vision is for the Charlotte Hornets here as we move into the future.
Yeah, one thing I will say before we jump into that is, March Madness is right around the corner. Some conference tournaments have already started. For us here, the sports fan in North Carolina, we often have a lot to look forward to in March Madness. So we'll get a little bit of relief and distraction from our Hornets and, our Panthers and all of that before we have to refocus on that. So that'll be a good distraction to kind of keep our minds occupied for a little bit. But, you hit the nail on the head. Briefly, we do want to discuss Jeff Peterson and, some comments he made in his introductory press conference. I know he's kind of reiterated some of what he said there on the Woj pod. He had a interview, I think it was with Hornets.com. It was on the Hornets YouTube channel with one of the writers for Hornets.com. He's kind of reiterated a lot of the same messages in all three of those forums as well. But, just a few takeaways I had, Eric, and I just want to kind of touch on them quickly and then get your thoughts and we can elaborate on this before we move on to the draft. But, oftentimes he mentioned he wants to build the right way. He wants to not skip steps. I thought both of those were very meaningful. He discussed, he doesn't want to just make the playoffs one year and then go on another 3-4 year playoff drought after that. And then obviously, I think the biggest takeaway everybody had and something a lot of people were talking about online was him and the owners multiple times said they want this to be the premier, not a premier, the premier franchise in the NBA. So, obviously, something I kind of had an issue with Mitch Kupchak was a lot of times when he was at the podium, he kind of did, what I would describe as like a woe is me bit and, described Charlotte as a small market. And it really came across as like a limited mindset to what the previous front office had, when Mitch Kupchak was at the podium. So it seems like these guys are shooting for the stars and, the saying shoot for the stars, land on the moon. Eric, what were kind of some of your takeaways and the things I just highlighted and, Jeff Peterson's media availability since he came on board?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing you mentioned, and I think it was evident for anyone that was watching that press conference was, like you said, Jeff Peterson as well as Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin. I mean, there was at least minimum 4 to 5 times they said, we want to be the premier franchise in the NBA. Now, do they make that happen? We hope so. We don't know. But at least what they're doing is setting their goals, as high as they can go. Like you mentioned with Mitch Kupchak, maybe there was some reality to what he was saying. But all at the same time, if you're kind of operating with that mindset from the jump, then you're also kind of limiting yourself in like what can be accomplished with that mindset. Now, so long story short, it's refreshing to hear this from Peterson and the owners to say, hey, you know, we're really looking to be the best franchise in the NBA. You know, they're shooting for the stars, land on the moon, like you said. Now it's just, are they going to be able to do it? Are they going to be able to build it that way? It's fun to go out and say that, but actually doing that is much, much harder. And honestly, there's some luck involved with that too. Like, you look at the Golden State Warriors and people would say, oh, that's a premier franchise. Well, yes, they made some savvy decisions with selecting certain players like a Stephen Curry, but all at the same time, like, Steph Curry could easily go higher than where he went in that draft. I believe he went seventh, and, you know, then they're not looked at as this model franchise. So some of it is luck, but it is definitely refreshing to hear leadership of the Hornets for a change to say, hey, we're gunning to be the number one team in the league. We're not just, you know, shooting for playoffs and be happy with that or anything to that extent. So, yeah, it was a breath of fresh air, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I think you made a really good point with, like, your Warriors example there, because, you know, becoming a really good team and a really, you know, sustainably successful franchise does take being a well-run franchise, and there's a little bit of luck. And honestly, you could argue the Hornets, to a large degree, have already kind of knocked out the luck part. You know, in the drafts where they've taken LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, they moved up in both of those drafts. They got better draft picks than the lottery odds would have indicated they were supposed to. And both of those guys, I know LaMelo, obviously, his availability and health is concerned, but from a talent perspective, you know, they hit it out of the water on, or they hit it out of the park on both of those guys. So you could argue the majority of the luck part is already taken care of. Now you just need the, you know, well-run franchise part. Obviously, that's much easier said than done, but now we just need people who can come in and run the organization well and make savvy moves, you know, evaluate talent in an intelligent way, you know, make good trades, pick up, you know, guys in free agency, sign players to contracts that aren't going to hamstring you long term. So, you know, I like, you know, to take a step back for a second, there's only so much I think you can take away from these press conferences. You know, it's really – There's only so much you can take away from a guy's track record coming in. You know, I've seen James say this on Twitter, but, you know, when guys are involved in other front offices, it's really hard to know how much input they had on certain decisions and how much credit to allocate between one guy and another, you know, in between the collective groups that make these decisions. So ultimately, we're really going to judge him off of what his results are. But I do think, you know, in these press conferences, there's a lot of just jibber jabber and cliches, but you do get some kind of glimpses into the mindset of a guy like Jeff Peterson when he's up there talking. And two things that I really like that he said that I've already touched on, but I think they tie together. The part about building the right way and not skipping steps, and, you know, discussing the fact that he doesn't just want to make the playoffs one year and then go on another drought. You know, I think in the past, the Hornets / Bobcats, you know, they've had obviously since where they made the playoffs for one year and then they go a long time without making it. And I think there's multiple reasons for that, but I think, you know, a guy like Michael Jordan, who's so ultra competitive, maybe isn't the best type of guy, you know, to lead a organization in the NBA and always keep the long-term view in mind. He's competitive and wants to win now. Sometimes you make short-sighted moves that, yes, they're the best for your franchise this season to get to the playoffs, but then they hamstring you going forward. So I love hearing Jeff Peterson come in and say that they're not going to skip steps. They're going to build it the right way. And I think that goes hand in hand with it, with, you know, going in with that mindset of, hey, we're not in this to just make the playoffs, cash in one year, you know, and then rebuild again.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And before we bury Mitch Kupchak too much, I do have to give him credit a little bit, because in the last few years, like, there was definitely multiple times where they could have maybe traded a Bridges or a PJ or whoever it may have been, but he did it. And a lot of his messaging at those times was, we don't want to make a move before we're ready. And while that could be boring for the fan, like, the truth is they weren't ready. But now flipping the page over to the new ownership and kind of how they are going about things, it was great to see what they did at the deadline this year, which we've already touched on in past episodes, but they really approached it in, you know, let's kind of change the culture. Let's get some high character guys in here. And in doing that, they also added two premium first round picks in, you know, 3-4 years down the line. And down the line, that could become very advantageous into acquiring a star player to go along with Brandon Miller, who hopefully continues to improve, and LaMelo Ball, who hopefully can get on the court and stay on the court. So just as far as the leadership perspective from the Hornets, as we sit here today on March 7th, I'm really excited. And I do think it's definitely a little bit of a contrast to where the Hornets were under Michael Jordan's leadership. It really seems like, at least at the minimum, with the messaging these new owners are giving, as well as Jeff Peterson, that resources aren't going to be an issue. They're going to invest the type of money they need to. Ultimately, after that, it's going to become about acquiring talent. So at least we know that moving forward, it seems like the Hornets aren't going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to resources and investing money into your team, your coaches, your players, your medical staff, and everything that kind of falls under that umbrella.
Yeah, and something that I hadn't thought to bring up that they said multiple times as well, and you mentioned it. They kept mentioning, you know, wanting to bring in high-character players and that they brought in 5 high-character players at the deadline. To me, my interpretation, and this is just my interpretation, so I could be completely wrong. When they say high-character, I think they more so mean, like, kind of almost like a good locker room guy, like kind of like a good – the better way to say it would be a good culture, you know, good culture guys. Guys that can be conducive to a winning culture is what more so what I think they mean versus like high character off the court, you know, those right. types of things. I think right. that's more what they're hinting at there. And, you know, how long have we been, you know, banging the table for finding ways to develop a winning culture with this franchise? So I think all in all, everything we've touched on, you know, that and everything we touched on here specifically about Jeff Peterson and everything we've talked about the new owners, I think you can definitely get – you definitely get the sense that they have a really good mindset. I think they've got the perfect mindset. It's a very refreshing mindset based on how this team's been run for the past several years. Now it all comes down to executing it. You can have all the right intentions, the perfect mindset, but if you don't execute it, none of it matters. But at the end of the day, if you got the wrong mindset, you know, if you're thinking backwards, obviously you're – further behind the eight ball.
Right. You basically don't even have a chance from the outset if you don't have, you know, the right mindset or whatever or what it takes. So, yeah, 100%.
Exactly. So, I think it's very positive. And again, you know, there will be mistakes made. These guys are human. They're not perfect. But, again, I have much more confidence that they're going to learn for these and grow because of the mindset that they have. Whereas, you know, if you compare it to another team down the street and like, you know, just to throw a random team in Charlotte out there, like the Carolina Panthers or something, right? When those guys make mistakes, maybe you're not as prone to assuming that they're going to learn from it and get better from it. So, but yeah, I don't want to get, you know, the Hornets are already stressful enough. Let's not, you know, parlay that with the Panthers and then just.
I think the Panthers have ruined a lot of the goodwill that over the past 4 to 5 years. But yeah, let's not dive into the Panthers. That's about as painful as a conversation as you can have right now. So, yeah, let's stick to the Hornets.
Yep. Well, let's do that, Eric. Before I kind of hand the baton off over to you, the show's draft expert here, I do briefly want to talk to you about allhornets.com. As always, this podcast is brought to you by allhornets.com, a credentialed Charlotte Hornets outlet powered by Sports Illustrated. AllHornets.com's aim is to bring you 360 degrees coverage on all things Charlotte Hornets. From breaking news, rumors, fan Q&As, and in-depth analysis, AllHornets.com covers it all, and nobody does it better. All right, so like I mentioned, we've got the, you know, the Buzzer Beaters podcast draft expert, Eric Barnes. Eric, I'm going to pass the baton over to you. You've got your kind of top 5 NBA draft prospect wish list for the Charlotte Hornets, so – I don't know if you want to go 5-1, 1-5, but you know, I'm going to let you do your thing here.
So let me begin with draft expert. That word expert is doing a lot of heavy lifting there, if you will. Let me put it this way. I am very passionate about the draft in NBA, NFL, any prospects. I've always been super engaged in the stuff like that. So, like, I'm looking prospects up, you know, long before people are even – most normal people are even considering it, like in October, November, kind of like, okay, well, what's on the horizon? Because, unfortunately for the Hornets, we haven't been doing a ton of winning in the past I don't know, decade or two. So, you know, a lot of the season is spent. Well, maybe next year things will be better. Who can we get in the draft? So I have been kind of on that time a little bit. For this exercise, I think we'll go 5-1. We'll save the best for last. And I want to keep in context here, the way I'm doing this, I'm doing this for players that best fit the Hornets, right? So this isn't like, okay, this is my draft board in general for any team in the league. This is players that I want to be on the Hornets. And as I list them, I'll kind of go into a little bit deeper into why, you know, I have them ranked there on my board. So starting at number 5, this one is maybe a little controversial because if you go look online at a bunch of, you know, draft boards and different things like that, he tends to be a lot lower, and I know why. But without further ado, my number 5 fit for the Hornets in the draft for this upcoming year is Dalton Kennett from Tennessee. Now, this guy, he's a little bit older. He's 23 years old. So, like, you know, a lot of times in the draft, those guys, you know, they're not really going top 5. But with Kennett and the Hornets, in theory, had their number 1 spot locked down as far as starters go. They had their number 3 spot locked down, and they had their number 5 locked down. So, really, like, for the Hornets, unless it's just an extreme talent at one of those positions, which I don't think is in the draft this year, I'm really looking to add, like, a big number 2 or a wing or, like, a 4 is what I'm looking to do. And Dalton Kennett, basically what he brings to the table, 6'6". He's got a solid frame. He's not kind of from the same mold as Brandon Miller or even LaMelo Ball, where he's kind of skinny and he needs to pack on pounds. He's already sturdy. Like, he's going to come into the league with an NBA body. And on top of that, the dude is a high-volume shooter. He's a primary scorer on his team. He lives in the mid-range. And honestly, he would just be a really nice complement to LaMelo at the 1, Brandon at the 3. You throw Kennett in at the 2. He adds more spacing to the floor. High IQ player, kind of fits the culture of what these owners are wanting to build with the high character and intangibles as far as on the floor, plays the right way. So for the Hornets, he's number 5 on my board. Do you have any follow-up questions? Is there any concerns with anything that I kind of laid out there for you?
It's funny. So I've watched Dalton Kennett live a few times. I was actually – so we're recording this Thursday. I was watching him last night play at South Carolina, where he had a very impressive showing. You know, my one con, and this is just a silly thing, that's a personal thing for me, he kind of carries himself he kind of has that like Duke basketball player aura to him a little bit. Like, he kind of seems like a little bit of a chotch. So, you know, there's that. Like, that's kind of like a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction where I'm like, ooh, you know, I don't know if I like this guy. He looks like he would, you know, he would be playing for Coach K, slapping the floor, being a chotch, like I was saying. But that aside, he does not play for Duke, so I do not have to feel that way. And, I mean, this kid's just a bucket getter. I mean, I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I think this has the potential to be someone – I would have him higher than 5. I know the 5 you have on your list, I'm not going to expose that, obviously. I would definitely have him higher than 5 because – I just think he's one of those guys where he's got potential to be an elite wing talent in the NBA.
Yeah.
And so you could have 2 elite wings, or at least elite on the offensive end for Kennett. And obviously Brandon Miller, we think, is an elite offensive wing talent as well. So you have 2 of those guys on the same offense. I mean, you know, all of a sudden, you know, there's nights where teams only have 1 elite wing defender, 1 good wing defender. I mean, you're looking at a lot of just blowouts where, you know, teams just can't keep up with this offense with Dalton Kennett paired with Brandon Miller and, you know, God willing, LaMelo Ball.
Right. Well, and Kennett, you watch him play, he looks awesome. What's keeping him from not being higher on my list and being higher on draft boards in general is, like I mentioned earlier, he's 23. So, like, some of these guys we're going to discuss here in a few minutes, a lot of these guys are like 18, 19. So if Dalton Kennett was doing this at 18, 19, then yeah, he would be much, much higher. But obviously, he's a grown man. Sometimes he's playing against teenagers. So you got to factor that in a little bit. When he gets to the league, he's not always going to be like, you know, one of the stronger wings on the floor. He's going to be just another guy of that body type. So there are hurdles he has to jump through, but his shot-making ability is very impressive. And it's not just catch and shoot. Like, he's jab-stepping, triple threat, off the dribble, kind of pull up mid-range, kind of some stuff similar that we see from Brandon Miller. And he's just a bucket getter. And in a draft where there's no, like, obvious, like, oh, my God, this is, like, I don't know, Victor Wembanyama. Like, there's no Wembanyama in this draft. Really, there's no Brandon Miller in this draft. So, like, a lot of what I'm looking for the Hornets this year, especially if they don't move up, especially if they're in that 4, 5, 6 range, like, just draft someone that fits into what you're trying to do. Don't try to go chase a superstar. Just draft a good basketball player that, in theory, should help you win. And I think Dalton Kennett kind of fits that to a T.
Hey, I want to say something real quick, too, because one larger point, and then let me give you the quick thing first. Yeah, just to touch on the catch and shoot, though, obviously that's not all that he does. But I'll tell you what, last night when I was watching him against South Carolina, they were doing a really good job of screening to get him open. You get him off a screen, the catch and shoot, that man is not missing. That man is not missing from deep on the catch and shoot off the screen, man. It is unbelievable the percentage he can knock their shots down at. But one thing, one kind of larger discussion I wanted to touch on really quickly. I don't want to take too much time on this. You mentioned something about drafting for fit. A lot of people will push back and say, you know, when you have lost as many games as the Hornets, stack talent and figure it out later. You do not draft for fit. I disagree a little bit. The Hornets are not your common, you know, however many games they're going to lose this year. Let's say they win, I don't know, 22 games. They're not your, you know, everyday, you know, 22-win team. Like, they've got two all-star level talents, LaMelo Ball, who's made an all-star team, and Brandon Miller, he's been a rising star. You got to imagine he's going to make multiple all-star teams if he keeps up what he's doing now. So this isn't your average everyday 22, you know, win team that you're looking at. Like, they've got legitimate young talent, and it does matter that the guy you draft fits into that. Otherwise, what's the purpose of having young talent when they can't play together? So I do want to push back on that. There was some of that argument last year, you know, with the Scoot versus Brandon thing. And, like, you know, I was a pro Scoot guy at the time, and people were like, hey, don't worry that you have LaMelo. If you think Scoot's a better player, draft him, figure out fit later. And that was probably more true then, right? Because you only had LaMelo. That was the one all-star level talent you had. Now that you've got two, don't give me this nonsense about fit doesn't matter. Fit doesn't matter. Fit definitely matters.
It definitely matters. Well, and I think I've mentioned this before on past episodes. In the current NBA, I think the NBA is more talented than ever. And it's not like it used to be. It's like, oh, if we sign Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett to go with Paul Pierce, like, you know, we're a clear, heavy favorite. Now, all right, I mean, those are some really talented players maybe in today's NBA possibly. But you look around the league right now, I mean, half the league has two or three guys where you're like, wow. So with that being the case, like, fit very much so matters. And you need all your pieces to fit together like a puzzle. Because if not, like, in my opinion, your ceiling is like a first or second round team. Because talent these days, as we see here in the year 2024, like, it's not enough. You really got to put together a team. It can't just be 1, 2, 3 guys, like, carrying everything for the team. So I'm glad you touched on that.
Yeah, but continue with your list. I did just want to touch on that because that's a larger discussion I wanted to get my thoughts on. And you mentioned it, so I had to go on a quick rant there.
For sure. Continue. Yeah, big Kennett fan. But moving on here, this is another guy. I liked him, his profile from the beginning of the year. I started looking into him. He's kind of in a situation right now where he is kind of limited in his playing time, and it's not really his fault. Who it is guard from UConn, Stephon Castle. This guy, and I don't want people to overreact to this necessarily, but when I watch how he plays, he honestly reminds me of SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's a 6'6 guy. He's rocked up. He plays the point guard position. And he really just has a smooth feel to his game. Like, you can see him operating. Like, he's another guy, like, high nuance, like, intelligent player, versatile. Like I said, 6'6. He's not like a skinny rail. Like, he's solid. And he has a high IQ. Now, going back to when SGA was coming out, I was a big fan of SGA too. Now, the difference between SGA and Stephon Castle, at least where they are at the same point in development, Stephon Castle is currently shooting 28.6% from three, and that's just not going to cut it. Now, his shot can be a little hitchy. Of course, we've seen these things improve, like LaMelo Ball coming out. He wasn't a high percentage shooter. But Castle, it's one of those things where he's just a versatile weapon that you can plug in. And I don't think he's anywhere near like what he's going to be when he gets to the NBA. And I mentioned he's on UConn. He's got veteran guards in front of him where they're, no matter how good he is, unless he was the second coming of LeBron James, like there's just no justifying putting a freshman on the court above those guys that they have there. Because, you know, they put in the time, they won a championship last year. Like these guys have real pedigrees. So he's kind of trying to fit his way in and into the team mindset, which, you know, I kind of like because he's learning to make sacrifices at a young age instead of coming in and being like, oh, I'm the man. Like in a way, part of that will prepare him for the NBA very well. But I'm just big into versatile guys that can help you in a lot of different ways. So big Stephon Castle fan.
So when I was kind of looking at some stuff on Stephon Castle when we were getting ready for this, things that jumped out, you know, I was actually watching a breakdown where they were giving a lot of examples of, you know, his length defensively and kind of how that was causing problems for a lot of the opponents he was facing. A lot of these instances where he's fighting through screens, I mean, a very willing defender, a very tough defender, and a very high-level defender. And obviously, if you're the Charlotte Hornets, you know, that alone is music to your ears. And, you know, kind of like what you were saying, a guy who plays defense like that, a lot of times that's as the owners would put it, a high-character guy, right? The guys who are willing to commit at that end of the floor. But one thing I do think, though, and it probably scares me just a little bit, is I don't know about his offensive game, right? I do have some question marks there. You mentioned what I was going to kind of mention is that, you know, when LaMelo Ball was coming into the draft, obviously he, you know, his three-point shot was a concern and he developed that and got better. And that could certainly be the case for Castle. I'm not saying it couldn't, but I do wonder, you know, how much of a concern and, you know, what I wonder what scouts will think, you know, as far as how they can, you know, develop his offensive game because, you know, as far as fit goes for the Hornets, maybe they think, hey, we're in a position where we would value defense a little bit more, especially if they're going to keep Steve Clifford maybe. Maybe they value someone who, you know, is more of a defensive-minded player and, you know, they'll take their chances on him growing on offense, right? But I do think – so I am curious to see what the scouts will say with that and kind of what the thought process will be there. I do think, though, this sounds like a good – you know, we keep talking about culture and character. He seems like a good culture guy, right? Someone who's going to buy in, who's going to play hard. Again, people who are committed on the defensive end, you know, those guys typically have a good all-around mindset that they bring to the game, to the team. So I do think he would be a good culture guy. The kind of lack of refined offensive game, not that anyone comes into the league with a totally refined offensive game, but you know, there's just some concerns on the offensive side of the ball with the way he plays that, you know, I'd probably have him closer to like 4 or 5, or I know he's at 4 for you. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 5.
Even lower, right.
Yeah.
I got you. And I understand those concerns. For me, a lot of it is he has a point guard background, right? And that is kind of the projection for him. Like he is going to have point guard skills, right? But considering his frame, I think he could easily slot in as a two guard for you. And like I mentioned earlier, with him being behind some of these, you know, juniors and seniors that are in front of him, it's just one of those things. He's not really able to show like the full repertoire. Like he's really kind of fitting into a role. I think long term, at what we're going to see with Castle, considering everything he brings to the table, we're just going to continue to see a guy that continues to grow his game because there's a really good foundation to build on for Castle. And if you look at a lot of boards, there are some big fans of Castle in the draft community, but right now his consensus is probably more so in like the 8, 9, 10 range. So for me, if the Hornets go with Castle, it's one of those things where maybe they drop down to 5 or 6. And again, it would be a tough debate for me with Kennett versus Castle, but again, Castle is like 18 years old. Kennett's 23. So that's a huge difference there.
Castle's 19.
Right. So, yeah, that's one of those things where what does Castle look like when he's 23? So that's why, like, if it was just their games today, I would take Kennett. But I'm basically projecting forward a little bit with Castle with some of the stuff I see. And that's why he's just a little bit higher on my board than where I have Kinnett right now.
Well, one concern of mine, too, is that obviously the Hornets aren't in, like, total win-now mode. But at the same time, you know, LaMelo Ball's been there for a few years. And they got to start winning eventually. And I think Castle seems like a little bit more of a project, again, at least on the offensive side of the ball. And I do wonder if maybe he's a year or two behind when the Hornets would start to kind of ramp up and be a legitimate playoff team, not a contender, like, you know, to do something serious, but legitimately, solidly, you know, contending to make the playoffs, be a top six team or be a high-end play-in team who makes it to the playoffs, you know, a couple years in a row. I do wonder if he'd be like a year or two behind that window. Eventually he could catch up, but I do just wonder if someone like Kinnett, who's a little bit more, you know, like I said, I always say this is more of an NFL term, but a little bit more, you know, pro ready. I do wonder if someone like that fits the timeline a little bit better. Even though we're not in total win now mode, you don't want to wait too long when you have a superstar, because obviously there's always concern, especially in a small market, that, you know, your young superstar could become disgruntled.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I do want to push back a little on Castle's game being like a project on the offensive side. I don't think it's really a project. I think the way he plays the game on offense is fine. He knows how to get to his spots. He plays at his own pace. The project part of his game, and it is a very important piece, maybe the most important piece in the modern NBA, is, of course, a three-point shot. So, like, he's got to progress on that. We've seen a lot of people do that. So for the sake of this exercise, I'm a big Castle fan. He's got some things to work on, but again, he's not had a ton of opportunity, but big Castle fan. All right. So moving on here. So far we got Dalton Kinnett 5, Stephon Castle 4. My number 3, I think this is going to be a little, maybe a little polarizing, because this guy is higher where in most like draft boards where you see him at, but I have Alexander Shar at number 3. And let me go into a little bit deeper why. For those not familiar with Shar, to make a generalization, his game, like, if he really hits, it's like a Giannis level player. He's like 7'1", like ultra athletic, can move decently well with the ball in his hands. Is an unbelievable defensive player because he's 7'1" and has that insane athleticism. And he can switch. He can kind of stay with guards. So, like, he is an awesome defensive piece. The reason he's not higher for me is I don't really know if he, in the NBA, if he's going to be a 5 or if he's going to be a 4. If he's going to be a 5, the Hornets already have Mark Williams, right? And to reference Alexander Sarr's shooting, he is shooting 29% from 3. And it doesn't look awful. I mean, it doesn't look great. But it's one of those things, if he never turns into a shooter, that means Mark Williams will have to turn into a shooter. And we believe that Mark Williams can, but, like, if you draft Alexander Sarr and he really never really turns out to be a shooter, then it kind of becomes a logjam of what are we doing? Like, we want to play Sarr. We took him really high. But we also invested in Mark Williams, like basically a lottery pick. So, like, that's why he's a little bit lower on my wish list compared to some of these other guys I have ahead of him. But, I mean, the upside is tantalizing. Like I mentioned, he is kind of the Giannis mold, 7-footer, insane athleticism, has a pretty good feel for the game. His brother is actually in the NBA, Olivier Sarr. He's with the OKC Thunder. So, you know, he's kind of been around the game and professional. So it is an interesting package. And I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up being the best player from the class. But I also wouldn't be shocked if he kind of ends up underwhelming just because that shot isn't coming along. And maybe he's not quite as effective at getting to the rim as someone like a Giannis is. But right now, Alexander Shar, number 3 on my big board for the Hornets for this upcoming draft season.
So I'm not 100% committed on this, and obviously this is our, like, way too early bit, so, you know, nothing is set in stone regardless. Star might be my number 1 guy for the Hornets as we stand here right now. So, you know, I was texting you earlier. The comp I kind of initially had was, like, a Pascal Siakam, But the more you pointed out the Giannis thing, and it's kind of like a almost like a Siakam-Giannis hybrid, because he's obviously taller than Siakam. He's not as physically dominant as Siakam, or sorry, he's not as physically dominant as Giannis, but he's getting to the rim and kind of imposing his will more than Siakam, it seems, at least against the competition he's going up against right now. To the point you made about either he or Mark, because you don't know if he's a 4 or 5, he or Mark would have to start making threes. I think Sarr's much more likely to be that guy. I mean, 29% from three is not great, but the fact that he's already taking threes in the game and he's knocking some of them down, you know, the fact that he can come into a game and do that, and the defense has to respect that's a possibility. I do think if they drafted him, he would be the more likely of the two, especially with the fact that this year we were expecting Mark to just take a few three-pointers during games, and then obviously that's been set back with the fact that he's hardly played in any games this year. But I do like Sarr a lot. I'm just having visions of like a LaMelo, Brandon Miller, Miles Bridges, Sarr, Mark Williams starting five. And I believe I texted you earlier, I said that's a dynasty. And is that an exaggeration? Yes. But can I dream? Absolutely. That, to me, on paper at least, I know LaMelo and increasingly now Mark obviously have their injury concerns, and the Hornets in general, the injury bug does not treat them well. But on paper, to me, that's juicy.
Well, and let me say too, I mentioned Sarr's 3-point percentage was 29 on two attempts a game. He's shooting 60% from the field. So, like, he is still being very efficient. Like, that height combined with the athleticism and the feel for the game, like, that's really serving him as far as attacking the rim. And on the flip side of, I don't know how he's going to fit with Mark. On the flip side of that, he fits kind of well with Brandon and LaMelo, because he's more of like I'm going to attack the rim, put pressure on the rim, while these guys are going to kind of stay out on the arc or mid-range and drain threes or mid-range pull-ups. So from that perspective, he does fit well. And also defensively, you can never have enough defenders, and this guy is going to be a plus defender in the NBA. So, could he be higher on this wish list here in March? Yes. But I still like Sarr. With him being this low, I don't want it to be a thing where, like, I totally dislike him. If the Hornets landed Sarr, I would be ecstatic, because there is a lot of upside there. And from day one, he should be able to play a role on defense and just kind of run into the rim. But there's just a couple guys that I kind of like a little bit more here.
But, yeah, the one thing I want to touch on, too, with Sarr is that there just aren't many guys who move the way he moves at 7'1". Like, when I was watching him, you had to tell me that he was a lot taller than Siakam, because the way he was moving, it just didn't hit me that he was a 7-footer. I thought he was obviously he was a big guy. I thought maybe 6'8", 6'9". He measures at 7'1". Like, there's just not many guys that move the way he does at that height, man. I mean, the freak of nature is a big guy like Giannis and Wembanyama and Kevin Durant. I know not all of them are 7 foot, but, bigger guys moving really well and scoring, on all parts of the floor. We have some superstars that do that, so I think we're a little bit numb to the fact that that is so uncommon and such a rare talent. So I think we kind of take things like that, these are spectacular talents and spectacular abilities to coincide, to have that height and have that skill set. I think we take it for granted a little bit.
Comps aren't always great for draft season, but of course they're great to use because it gives people an idea. For this podcast, of course, we got a lot of Hornets fans listening, if not 100% all Hornets fans listening. A good comp I could give you for Sarr, he's like Ty Jones, but if Ty Jones had a higher basketball IQ. That's kind of the sense I get, from Alexander Sarr. So, and, again, there's tantalizing upside there. So Sarr will be interesting to follow throughout the draft process. And, of course, once he gets to the NBA as well.
You're saying Sarr is Kai Jones if Kai Jones was an NBA player.
Yeah, basically. All right, so, okay, just a review before we move on here. Dalton Kennett at 5 for my wish list for the Hornets. And I've got Stephon Castle at 4, Alexander Sarr at 3. So that brings us to number 2. And I'm sure a lot of people, if they followed any of this at all, they probably have a good idea who the top 2 are. The question is, what order? At number 2, I have Zachary Richichet, who is playing out of France. He is a wing. For anyone that listened back, pre-draft last year, I am a sucker for big wings that can shoot. And that is exactly what Richichet is. He is a 6'9 guy He's been shooting 56% from three over overseas. So, I mean, that's an absurd number. He plays a good defense. Now, I do want to say that 56% was during the Euro Cup. There's kind of like two sections of the season they're having. And on the second part of it, I think they're about the same amount of games, but he's shooting 37% from three. So either way, he's a really good shooter. But it is on, it's not on a lot of attempts a game. So it's like, well, he's definitely a good shooter, but like, what is it like if he's shooting more contested shots? That's why he's not number two, or that's why he's not number one on my list, because I just am not sure about, you know, what exactly does he look like as more of a volume scorer when he's kind of handling more of the load. But again, 6'9 guys that are 3-point snipers, like, every NBA team wants those guys. Like, those guys, like, are very, very hard to find. And that's what Risacher brings to the table. So he's an interesting prospect. I don't know how much you've looked into him, but what are your thoughts on Risacher, Atticus?
Yeah, this is probably the prospect that we're going to discuss that I've looked into about the least. But I will say, from watching some of his highlights and just kind of hearing your breakdown there, there's a lot to like. It seems like a lot of the highlights I see, it's him coming off screens, you know, catch and shoot three, or him coming off screens and rolling to the rim and finishing there. So, you know, I'm not sure how much of like a playmaker he is, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, if he can be an elite catch and shoot guy, you know, score from beyond the arc, you know, he could be another elite level scoring wing to pair alongside LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. So, I mean, it kind of goes back similarly to the Dalton Connect thing a little bit too. Like, you got to be excited about that. He's obviously sounds like he's a taller guy. Do you know how old he is? Did you mention that already?
I did not. I know he's either 18 or 19. Let me
younger than Connect. I think he's 19 as well, if you want to double check. But yeah, younger than Connect as well. So has some of the attributes that we like about him, but obviously, you know, on paper, ideally, he has, you know, more room to grow and, you know, is further away from a ceiling and maybe even has a higher ceiling.
So, yeah, he's 18 right now. His birthday is April 8th, so he'll be turning 19 soon. But, yeah, obviously super young to be shooting that high of a percentage at 18 years old in a pro basketball league is obviously very impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, another potential elite level offensive, you know, scoring wing. You said you like a lot about his defense as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he has the height, he has the tools. And I do think that's one good thing about like the EuroLeague and leagues over there in Europe is they really put an emphasis on team and, you know, kind of, you know, being just one part of the entire unit. So I think guys that are kind of overseas, they kind of have to learn, like, okay, it's not all about me, especially these young guys. Like, almost none of these young guys are just giving the ball and be like, hey, you're the star of the team. Like, you know, carry us to the promised land. Like, most of them are, like, guys off the bench or maybe, like, the fourth or fifth starter. So it kind of humbles them early on. So to be able to be in a situation like that and be legitimately productive and be, like, a high-end role player over there at such a young age, like, to me, it just builds a really great foundation for these young guys to build on as they continue to grow their skills and as they adjust to the NBA to be able to get on the court early on and kind of contribute to a team that's, you know, looking to win ball games.
I like it. Eric, do we want to keep the people waiting, or do you just want to roll to your number one for the grand finale here?
Yeah, so number one, I'm sure a lot of people, if they've done any research, you could probably guess at this point. It is an American player. I know we've got a lot of foreign guys on here right now, or at least a couple. It's brother of OKC Thunder, Jalen Williams. It's Cody Williams out of Colorado. This guy is like a 6'8", 6'9", like super long, wiry player that is really efficient from the field. Let's see his numbers. Cody Williams, he's 59% from the field is what he's shooting. That's on 8 attempts a game. He's 45.7% from three, and he's shooting about 70% from the line. So let me go into a little bit why for the Hornets he's number one for me. When I look at Brandon Miller, everyone knows I'm a huge Brandon Miller fan. I have been for a long time. His signature skill is shooting the rock and kind of mid-range. Like, that's his calling card. Cody Williams is kind of the opposite. He's like a premium prospect, And while his three-point percentage is good on paper, like, he is not taking, like, any movement threes. Like, it's kind of like catch and shoot if he's wide open. But when he's open, he knocks them down. When I think about pairing Brandon Miller with Cody Williams, I think they're just kind of a perfect match. It's like a yin and yang, like salt and pepper type thing. Like, where Cody's strength is, you know, being long and attacking the rim. And he kind of has some questions with the three-point ball, but that's where Brandon Miller comes in. We talked about earlier fitting your team together like a puzzle. I think these two guys' games fit together beautifully. And you also think about Jalen Williams, like, when he was at Santa Clara, like, he was there, he was like a four-year guy there. And by the time he left Santa Clara, like, I mean, he was jacked. Cody right now, like, he has really good functional strength, but he's not anywhere near being jacked. So seeing what his brother did and how his body progressed over his time at Santa Clara, I think there's a really good chance that, you know, as Cody continues to mature and the years go by, like, he's going to continue to pack on pounds as well. And like I mentioned earlier, like, he's already good at attacking the rim and converting on, you know, kind of high contested layups there. That's something that only looked improved. And while the jump shot isn't really necessarily, you know, where you really want it to be for like a number one pick type of player, I mean, he's still shooting a high percentage. So at the minimum, it goes back to that IQ we were talking about, playing with intangibles, taking shots when they're open. He's taking good shots because he's converting them at a high percentage. He's not a guy you're going to have to worry about going out there and just chucking up shots. And he's really another guy that kind of plays within that team mindset. And again, he's number one for me because what he brings to the table, I just think he's going to complement Brandon Miller so well, what he brings to an NBA team.
It's funny because obviously you've done much more digging and you've watched Cody Williams a lot more. I'll read you exactly what I had kind of typed down in my brief little notes here. More rim pressure, but seems like he's similar to Brandon Miller in some ways as a scorer. Could try to get to the rim while Miller focuses more on being a shooter. Quote, slasher. So it's basically much more condensed summary of what you just said there. I think we kind of view this guy the same way in a lot of ways. It is interesting because something I was kind of thinking about before we jumped on here is, and obviously I've kind of got your opinion on it from your explanation, is would it be better to have Brandon Miller paired on the wing with someone who has more of a similar skill set? So the defense just has to worry about almost not a clone of Brandon Miller, but a Brandon Miller 2.0 out there. Or would it be better if someone has, you know, some similar skill sets, but, you know, they're much more prone to attack the rim, get more rim pressure. Also, you throw in there that you've got Miles Bridges who gets more rim pressure. So that's two guys you have to worry about who are probably on the court at the same time a lot, you know, at some point down the line. So I think I know your answer based off of your explanation, but maybe elaborate on it more. Do you think it's better to have Brandon Miller on the wing paired with someone who, you know, is kind of more of a shooter or someone who can shoot like Williams and, but, you know, is much more prone to get to the rim and attack that way? And, you know, why do you kind of, I guess the better question is, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about why you think that's better, why you prefer that more?
Yeah, so with Cody, the fact that he is converting the three-point attempts at a decent rate, granted low percentage, granted they're not really tough shots, the fact that he can do it is why I'm really comfortable with him at number one. But to answer your question, we talked about it earlier, like, in today's NBA, like, you got to have your team fit. Like, all the skill sets have to mesh together to make a team. And I think with Brandon, like, obviously he struggles at, you know, attacking the rim. That's why he's pulling up a lot from mid-range or even these short jump shots we see from him. It would be really advantageous to have another, like, jumbo size wing, but instead of specializing in three-pointers, he specializes in attacking the rim. And it's still going to bring you the versatility with everything that comes in a 6'8", 6'9", like, you know, springy athletic wing in the modern NBA. And maybe I put too much stock into it, but I was a big Jalen Williams fan back in the year he came out. And just seeing what he's done, and this is his second year in the league, and the fact that, you know, Cody can kind of lean on his brother Jalen a little bit, and I'm sure he's been doing that, you know, all while he's been growing up, and especially these last few years while Jalen's been in the league and is kind of turning into kind of an all-star level player of sorts. I just think there's a lot of ingredients there that I really like. And I think if you put him next to Brandon Miller, like it's really going to be a really nice compliment, especially as Cody continues to grow and get better. And, you know, the jump shot becomes more and more reliable. And he really just has more time to put in work. So Cody Williams, definitely number one on my wish list. And I hope that kind of answered your question a little bit there.
Yeah, no, it did. It's just – it's funny that the narrative around this draft has been that it's a weak draft. And we know that that's happened in the past. The draft that LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards came out in was considered to be a weak draft. And now that's obviously looked at, you know, very differently than the pre-draft narratives that came around to it. I think a lot of times when there's not a guaranteed, or I guess a quote-unquote guaranteed generational talent like a Victor, you know, going back to like the LeBron draft, or, you know, even though Zion Williamson, you know, I don't know what you'd make of his career so far, but obviously, you know, looked at as a generational talent and a face of the franchise type talent there and personality. And he kind of has that aura. Since there's not some like big name or multiple big names that like grab headlines and, you know, get you to race to your TV, I think people say it's a weak draft, but I think there's a lot of quality players here. Maybe they're not all like franchise altering guys too. Maybe that's why it's looked like that as well. But like I've mentioned in the past, the Hornets are in a unique position where they're not winning a lot of games, yet they don't need a franchise player. They don't need a franchise savior. They've got LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, who are two franchise player level talents. Again, we worry about the health with LaMelo Ball, but certainly talented enough to lead a franchise. Brandon Miller, he has the tangibles and intangibles, it seems like, from what we've seen so far. So it's kind of a custom-made draft for the Hornets to be picking early in the sense that, you know, they don't need someone to come in and save their franchise, but they could have, depending on where they draft and kind of how the lottery works for them, they could have their pick of the litter at a lot of really nice players who, I don't want to say complimentary pieces because that maybe downplays, you know, the value and the impact they would have a little bit, but really nice additions to a young core that you could continue to build upon. So it seems like the top of this draft is probably more talented and a lot better than people are giving it credit for, just because there's not a mega superstar who is going to draw massive TV ratings or something like that.
Right. Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that. Like, if there's not a Wembanyama, if there's not a LeBron, if there's not a Zion, like, people just kind of write it off as, oh, weak draft, which I always find funny because people always base that off the top two or three guys. And, like, I understand it to a certain extent, but it's like, I mean, there could be really – it could be a depth draft. Like, there could just be really good players, like, all the way through the teens and into the 20s. And especially when you're drafting, you know, somewhere around the top five, which the Hornets will be, like, you're going to be able to get a legitimate league good NBA player in that range. Of course, it's just about picking the right guy. But, yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, the Anthony Edwards, LaMelo draft. I mean, Haliburton goes 12 in that draft. So while it may be labeled a bad draft, there is going to be really nice NBA contributors and perhaps even, you know, NBA all-stars come from this. It's just about, you know, the Hornets going through their process and hopefully, you know, trusting their scouting department and making the right selection. And hopefully it all fits together and it works out. But really excited that the Hornets are going to be adding, you know, a premium talent here, you know, in the next 3-4 months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to bet you there's at least two or three guys in this draft. I don't know exactly who they're going to be, but at least two or three guys in this draft who make an all-star team, if not multiple all-star appearances, yeah. Right? There's so much young talent coming into the league, and while we face this whole issue of who's going to be the next face of the league when LeBron, you know, retires, right? And, like, we have that whole issue, and maybe there's not, like, one go-to player who is, like, the best player in the world or, like, top two or three who can also be like a great ambassador and super marketable and all that. There's still a ton of depth as far as young talent. And again, I think that not to go into too much of a larger discussion about this, but, you know, I think we as fans and the, you know, basketball media and sports media as a whole kind of acts like there's a little bit more of an issue as far as talent in the league right now. I think there's just plenty of talent. And I think sometimes people get that confused with the fact that there's not necessarily a Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, like, you know, bad MF-er who, you know, has to be with, and you got to go through them. Well,
I think a lot of that question is almost in the same vein as like the MJ LeBron debate. Like, it's kind of just like a media, like, you know, numbers, views, clicks type thing. I could be wrong. That's kind of my outlook on it. But the truth is, when it comes to that, as much as I hate to say it, because the Hornets almost had him, very happy with Brandon Miller, but it, for all intents and purposes, it seems like Wembanyama is well on his way to being that guy. So, like, you know, let me save you the debate and the airtime on ESPN. Like, it's Wembanyama, like, the end. But yeah. Also, before we get off here, I do want to have an honorable mention for one player. I know this was a top five, but like we talked about, there's a chance the Hornets could end up at 6, 7, or maybe even 8, depending on how the rest of the season goes. This guy I really like, and it's crazy that I really like him, because I normally do not like guys his size, because I think the NBA is going, you know, much bigger in the future. But Reed Sheppard at Kentucky is one heck of a basketball player, man. And he's really, like, the numbers he's putting up as a three-point shooter are historical. Like, he is a 50-plus three-point percent shooter. But for today, as we sit here March 7th, I couldn't put him in my top five, because, you know, 6'3", like 180, kind of in that range. But as the draft gets closer, he will be a name that you hear mentioned, especially, like I said, if the Hornets end up falling a couple spots.
Got it. Something to keep note of. Eric, I'm sure we'll do this again, and this will be a good offseason topic. We'll have plenty of NBA draft, you know, discussions once the offseason gets here. You know, we did kind of want to just peek behind the curtain a little bit now that the season's getting towards an end and the New York Hornets have gotten off their hot streak a little bit. We did want to touch on this a little bit. You know, the next episode, I'm sure, will be more about what's happening on the court once we get more games in and can discuss that. But this has been a lot of fun. I think it'll be fun to revisit this, and, you know, when it gets closer to the draft time and after the draft, and see what the Hornets do, and see, you know, if our mind has changed a lot, and if the Hornets maybe agree with us. So it's be something fun to look back on. But yeah, Eric, this was a good time, man. I look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, no doubt, man. We'll see you then.